Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today we're going to be talking all about continuous delivery, continuous deployment, and how to create some awesome dashboards for your Selenium and automation test scripts with Sahas Waramanian Subramanian. And I'm sorry, Sahas, I probably butchered that, but I've been practicing all day and that's the best I got. He has some awesome insights into continuous delivery and automation and quality. I really enjoyed my interview with Sahas. You know, it's one of those interviews where he just happens to be speaking about everything that I've been struggling with in my current role. And it's just refreshing to hear someone else that has gone through the same things, but they have solutions in place to actually solve them. So make sure you listen all the way to the end. But first, let's hear it for our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. Hey, Sahas. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
How are you?
Great. Yeah, it's finally great to have you on the show. I know we had some technical difficulties, but we're live now, so I'm looking forward to our discussion. But before we get into it, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So, yes, my name is Sahas. I am living in the Chicago area right now, and I'm working with CDK Global as an architect, specifically focusing on continuous delivery and quality disciplines. And I've been in software industry for like around 11, 12 years now, and have played different roles. Right now, as I mentioned, I'm focusing more on continuous delivery and quality. Before that, I was working for a Microsoft partner. I'm also one of the Microsoft Visual Studio ALM MVPs. And before that, I was a developer. I was a build engineer and Scrum Master. It's kind of played different roles at different times, matching the needs of the company, and I'm here.
Awesome. Yeah, you have a lot of experience, so I'll probably be asking questions from all different areas, but today I really want to try to focus on the continuous delivery piece, and also the second thing I'd probably want to focus on is you've been blogging on some awesome Selenium BDD result dashboards that look awesome, so I'm probably going to ask you a few questions around that too.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I'm excited.
Cool. So at a high level, how would you explain what is continuous delivery?
So continuous delivery is something very kind of a buzzword now, but the core crux goes back to very simple. How can we deliver what we made to our customers as early as possible and learn more feedback? So the point goes back to getting continuous feedback, getting faster feedback from our customers and our consumers who are using our products. In order to do that, we have to follow several things, in between, right from writing good stories all the way through following certain practices, while coding and shipping and, all the stuff. So continuous delivery is one of the ways to get our product in the hands of our customers as early as possible and gain, good feedback on that. Once you get the feedback, then it's important, that's the most important part of it. How do we kind of put it back into our life cycle and make the product better and better, and hence our customers would love to use it.
Very cool. So how does testing fit into a continuous delivery? Is an important piece that you need to test before a build is promoted to the next stage before it's delivered to users? How does that process work?
Testing / the whole quality is absolutely important piece. I strongly believe in having a high quality product, and I strongly believe in some of the practices associated with agile quality. So the whole world, you know, whatever was before, it could be waterfall, we may say V-model, whatnot. And then now everybody is shifting towards agile. Everybody starts talking about agile. Almost any product company, any software company you go around the world would probably say, I'm doing agile. I'm doing daily stand-ups, right? But so the world has moved on. We were shipping product like once in 6 months, maybe once in a year, once in 2 years. Now everybody is thinking about shipping the product in a reduced cycle time. Ship it once in 2 weeks, ship it once in 4 weeks, ship it once in a month kind of thing, right? So everything changed around that. The business need changed. So now it's not only development has to shift gears towards agile, everything has to shift gears towards delivering that product, which means quality aspects also have to change. There are very specific prescription kind of stuff, which we might talk in detail, you know, over time. At a high level, I'm a big believer of agile quality and how would we fit the quality mindset into the product building life cycle. We follow specific things, meaning we kind of, for lack of a better term, we call that as a quality manifesto. Regardless of what you do, you have to build quality in. You know, you shouldn't be thinking about quality as an after the fact, which unfortunately has been the way how we have worked so far, right? It's like we would first get the requirements out and we'll design, we'll kind of do some coding, and finally we will say, okay, I'm ready, bring in some testers, let's start doing testing. So instead of trying to verify our understanding and quality at the end of the cycle, continuous delivery, if we want to deliver product continuously, we have to continuously evaluate the quality at every stage. So it's testing throughout the cycle is important. That is one very critical piece of building quality, fitting quality into continuous delivery. And second thing, what we call is checking our functionality. What typically has been happening is, I created this screen, I have this button, I have this whatever functionality. Now QAs, our quality test automation guys, come and test it for me. So the intention is, at that point, what we leave to them is like, okay, I created a screen, go and test the screen for me. That's kind of a situation. That's kind of, I would say, checking whether the screen works or not, checking the functionality. However, now what we're trying to do is like, we're trying to deliver the product back to our customers in a shorter cycle, and we're trying to learn from the feedback. Of course, customer would have given a feedback, and our product owners would have created stories based on the feedback and kind of reflected that on the life cycle. We need to engage the quality evangelists or who think from a quality perspective to test our understanding. Here's the feedback that we got from the customer, and here's what we built. Did we build what he wanted? Instead of taking the tester directly into a screen and say, oh, here's my screen, go and test. Instead of checking the functionality, we need to check our understanding. Whether did we understand the problem correct? Did we build the right solution, the right thing, the right way? The third aspect we focus on finding bugs. However, in a shorter cycle, if in 4 weeks, if I'm finding a bug, how likely would I go and fix the bug before it goes to my customer's hand? So instead of finding a bug, pair with the developer, be a part of the whole ceremony, pair with your product owner, try to understand what your customer really wanted, and focus on preventing bugs. Employ techniques, for example, sit with the developer while he's designing, while he's coding, and try to influence the developer to think like you from a quality perspective, and hence you cover more area while the developer is on the line of the code. And most important aspect that we should see is, conventionally it's been like QA's responsibility. Quality, in some places, quality could be a separate organization. We might say quality department, or outsourced somewhere to some country, and QAs and testers and test automation experts or whatnot. That's kind of, we have to move away from that, and the whole team has to own the quality. It's not that I, as a developer, I write the code. I would throw to the other side of the window and say, hey, QA, go and test it for me. We as a team have to own quality, which means we as a team have to, for example, when we plan our stories, we have to think about quality aspects And, you know, while we're thinking about design aspects, while we're thinking about, okay, I need for, in order to deliver this user story, I'm going to change the store procedure. I'm going to change this service. I'm going to create a new service. I'm going to create a new screen. We also have to think about, okay, I have to think about what is the expected load on this particular service? How do I verify that particular character that my product owner wants? Say, you know, you got to go back to your product owner and ask him, like, okay, you're asking me to build this new service. Okay, what if it comes up in the Super Bowl ad? What if I get 30,000 hits in 3 seconds? How do you expect the service to react? So it has to be more collaborative, the whole team owning quality in order to deliver what would delight our customer. That's the fourth aspect. And the fifth aspect is, for some reason, we all, you know, have been through that situation, including me and many of my friends, is like, oh, you know, if you have an application that has like 7 screens and 70 functionalities, it should have like 700 test cases. Go and automate everything. Go and automate all the button clicks and whatnot. Instead, what I personally call that as a, you know, instead of automating everything, you cannot really get rid of manual verification. You cannot really clone your brain the way your brain thinks, the way your product owner would see the product, the way your customer, millions of customers would see the product. Rather, you should use the automation for its strength, meaning we have to automate in a more rationalized fashion. Because for some reason, because we had this kind of situation of QAs, separate quality team, etc., mostly automation meant to be like, okay, you know, automating at the surface, automating at the UI level, automating the GUIs. Rather, we have to think about more in deep. Now, we as a team, why do we want to repeat something if that has been automated at the unit test level? If something has to be automated at the unit test level, why should we automate at the GUI level? If something can be automated at the web service level, why would you automate that at the GUI level? So we had to take some rationalized approach to even to automate things. Instead of closing our eyes and automating from the screen and trying to automate every single button click, we got to kind of, because every single script, every single automation that we do is going to need a lot of love and maintenance. And over time, one of the conventional complaints that I heard over and over with many teams is, we invested in automation, we invested in GUI automation, we created 700 test cases, but after 6 months, everything started failing and we don't know why. Of course it would, because you did not maintain. Your product moved on, your code moved on. You maintained the product code, production code, but you did not maintain your test cases. So why wouldn't it fail? It's a concern if it's not failing. So it's like implementing our energy in a much more constructive way, much more, you know, thoughtful way is important. That's the fifth aspect I call as rationalized automation. So these are kind of, these five aspects are kind of the backbone of, at least I would say, wherever I go, wherever I try to implement automation, wherever I try to implement quality, we would bank on these five things.
Awesome. Now, there's a lot of things you cover there, so I want to try to unpack a few of the points that you brought up. Let's start with the rational automation. So I guess I'm dealing with this myself. I work with 8 sprint teams, and I try to tell them, you know, this is development. Automation is development. You're responsible for your test. If the application changes, if you change it, you need to bake testability into your application to know that if you make a change here, you need to be thinking about automation because it's going to affect it later on down the road and make it hard to actually run it in a CI environment. So how do you encourage that? I think I read somewhere you work with like 400 developers, which is a lot more than what I work with, and I'm struggling with it. So how do you change that mindset or the culture to think of automation as a team activity, not just for a QA resource?
Sure. It's kind of a very interesting question. I wouldn't say I am doing that as a person. It's got multiple aspects. Number one, the foremost and very important aspect I believe in is the buy-in from your leadership. Fortunately, where I am in, we have strong buy-in towards improving our overall maturity towards continuous delivery, towards agility, our ability to, you know, enable our customers to pull the product at any time, pull the latest code that we have done, pull the latest feature that we have done at any time. So the leadership, what does that mean? Is that means a lot. Meaning if our leadership is strongly committed, our leadership, you know, that comes from a push from top to bottom, right? On the other hand, what we try to encourage, what we try to constantly search and find and figure out the aspects that our developers love. Because at the end of the day, if you look at it, we kind of, in a fun way, we say a term called RDD. Like BDD, there's something called RDD. It's nothing but, it's again, completely personal, completely like what we do within a small group. It's called resume-driven development. What developers love, right? It's like how, if I could go and you know, blog about, if I could go and talk in the meetup, if I could go and talk to my friends and say that, hey, I'm working in this cool tool, I'm working in this cool technology. Developers love that, right? Mm-hmm. We would love to work on a cool technology. So from a bottom-up perspective, how would you encourage your development team to participate in this thing is by constantly providing that value of, hey, here's a new cool technology. Instead of you going and say, for example, JMeter, you know, load test or JMeter API tests, there's a new cool tool called Taurus. And under the hood, the test case might be running using JMeter or Gatling or Tsung or something else. But you as a developer, you would just, you know, write your test cases using Taurus, which is using the YAML, and it's much more readable. You can do code reviews easily. It fits into your whole CI, CD pipeline much more efficiently, and it's going to give a lot of productivity back to you. That's going to create, ignite some stuff at the bottom, at the engineer level. And also the third aspect that I you know, believe in is the tooling platform. If I have a test case, if I have it running every night and I am a QA, I walk in the next day morning and I'm sending a report or I'm seeing a report saying, last night we ran 700 test cases, 200 of them failed. It doesn't have any impact on the team. It's barely, it has any kind of impact. Rather, if we fit that in part of the delivery pipeline, if we get to a point where you check in a piece of code, we would figure out what is the impact of that code, and we're going to run only those tests which relates to the changed code, and we're going to let you go through, let your code propagate across the environments only when the tests pass, which is likely to have higher impact, because if I check in a piece of code, it goes and gets deployed to, say, dev environment, and it runs, say, 10 test cases, and two of them fails, I'm likely to get almost instantaneous feedback, like in 30 minutes or 10 minutes versus the next day. You know, when I see the feedback in 10 minutes or 30 minutes, I'm likely to go and react. I'm likely to go and work on it and fix it and make it better so that I can see my code running in my perf environment. You know, maybe I'm trying to evaluate that for a critical bug that kind of my service breaks only when I hit 10,000 concurrency. So our tooling has to improve. Our tooling has to support this whole idea of continuous delivery, and that's how quality gets injected into the delivery pipeline. Otherwise, quality will stand in the sidelines, QAs will keep crying, and these guys, developers, will keep ignoring.
So that's a great point that you brought up. So I'm just curious to know how it actually works in the real world. So from my experience, this is something we're struggling with. A developer checks in code into the main branch, and then at night, we have a job that runs a voila BDD test. And so if those tests fail, no one looks at the results, and the code still stays there. So even if we found that a test broke, the code still lives there. Someone else checks in code, same thing. So all of a sudden, we have layer on top of layer of what could possibly be bad code, and we don't know what change it is that caused something to break. So I guess what we're struggling with is, how do we know at runtime with continuous delivery, continuous integration, what tests to run based on impact? Is there some sort of logic that you say, with this test will map to these three? I mean, this piece of code is going to map to these three tests. How do you know that at runtime, I guess, when someone checks something in?
So yeah, I mean, that goes back to a lot of technology specific, you know, differences. Like, I don't know, possibly I don't have an answer for like JavaScript and Java and Scala and everything, but then it's like, at least for some technologies like .NET, there's something called, you know, test impact analysis that comes part of Visual Studio and TFS world of things, and which will give us, like, it'll run only the impacted test cases.
Cool.
On the other hand, what I would also say is it's a huge cultural shift. What you explained is 99% happens all the places. Those 1%ers are kind of maybe some projects in Netflix and some projects in, you know, Etsy, and maybe some places in Google may not have that struggle. They may have the ownership when something fails, developers jump in and fix it. But including my place, we're all going through that transformation, and it's kind of a nice struggle to go through. What we try to do is, like, we try to eliminate the flaky test cases. We try to, basically the idea is, like, how can I provide the feedback as fast as possible on the face of the developer? If I am checking in the piece of the code, if my build has to stand in the queue, if my build goes runs for 35 minutes, and then and it's you know, I have Selenium Grid locally set up, or, you know, many places are using SAS Labs now, which is good. So my test runs in SAS Labs, but my test runs for 2 hours, and, you know, finally I get a, for two lines of code that I changed, if I have to wait for 4 hours to get a feedback, that's kind of the worst scenario, versus how can I get the fastest possible feedback? So we kind of try to build, you know, something like a smoke suite and a regression suite. To, they are traditional things, but we try to kind of stick to it. Like, okay, a smoke, no test runs more than a minute, meaning no test in the sense the GUI test that runs in SAS Labs. Nothing runs more than a minute. You know, you kind of set some, you know, high bar like that. Like, okay, I should get the fastest feedback. The moment I check in, it should start running in parallel. It should all run in parallel instead of running in sequence. And we should have our test cases are, you know, we follow, at least I believe in, I follow certain, you know, specific coding practices to design your test cases, that your all your tests should be independent. Even though it is GUI test, it should be independent. You should be, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be depending on external data, meaning you shouldn't be assuming that I have a particular item in my inventory and I'm trying to change and edit that thing. If you're trying to change and edit something, you should better populate that item. You know that item exists. You just go and edit and update. And finally, when you come back, you just go and delete and come back. We try to follow certain coding practices to give the fastest possible feedback to the developer. And it's a cultural shift. You know, still not a lot of developers care about it. But, you know, it's with the help of leadership, we're constantly, you know, grinding that thing, constantly talking about continuous delivery, constantly talking about team owning quality, and constantly making developers accountable. On the other hand, you know, I would go and not, and I'm not going to just go and make them accountable. I'm going to ask them, like, okay, for you to become more accountable, what do you want? What would help you? Give me that feedback. We'll go and improve the tooling around it.
Great points. What I love about, this is why I started the podcast, is sometimes when you're testing or an automation engineer, you feel like you're the only one going through these things. But everything you talk about is exactly what's happening in the company I'm working for. And I'm sure a lot of other people are struggling with it. So this is awesome stuff. So you brought up something. Yeah, you brought up something about flakiness. And I think everyone that's listening can relate to flakiness. And this is actually what caught my attention. I've been trying to create a dashboard to keep track of flakiness over time to say, look, this feature file every 3 days fails, but then it passes every so often, but there's no way I could really track it that well. So I was creating a weird MySQL database, and I had a Python script that was just taking the data from the BDD and putting it into the SQL database, and I was trying to write a front end in PHP. And then you contacted me and showed me a screenshot of these awesome looking dashboards that you have that actually are tracking flakiness. Can you just tell us a little bit about the technology you use to make these cool test automation dashboards?
Sure. I'm glad that it's kind of useful. So the technology behind it is, first of all, I would tell you that this is the technology and the stuff that I'm going to explain is not meant for test automation at all. Mm-hmm. It is the purpose that driven me to use that product. And I thought it'll be cool to use it. And then we started using it. So it's called Elasticsearch Logstash and Kibana Stack, Elk Stack. It's completely open source. Basically, that's used for kind of a few different purposes. Like, one is collection and analysis areas, and you know, it's used in analytics. And LinkedIn is a big player in that. They kind of use BI and combination of BI and Elasticsearch to index their data. The whole backbone behind it is like Elasticsearch indexing, and the technology behind it works really faster to you know, give you the data whatever you want, and they index it. You know, there are some best practices to index the data in a specific way, so it gives you benefits. So to kind of round it up, we run the test, and your test will generate some sort of log in a particular structure. You got to define a logging structure. Like, okay, here's the division, here's the product, here's the application, here's the browser, here's the browser version that I'm trying to run my tests on, here's a test case scenario name, and here's a result. It's kind of a simple structure. Define the structure, somehow generate that log from your test, and spit it into a place. And then that, say, for example, you spit it into like D drive, test run logs or something. Now, you have to have a log stash or something called nxlog to monitor that particular folder for a specific file, like you spit out a JSON file. And you're going to say, hey, log stash, look out, you know, go to this D colon, this particular folder. If you see any change in the files with extension.json, grab the difference, ship it to Elasticsearch. So Logstash will be the shipper, which will kind of grab your logs and send it to Elasticsearch. Elasticsearch will store your logs in a time, it's a time series database. So you can generate a log and say, okay, you can have test case one running on Chrome latest, test case one running on Firefox latest now, and then Elasticsearch will store it with the timestamp automatically. And then you run it again after hour, again after hour, again after hour. And the beauty of Elasticsearch is like you can go and query and say, ask, hey, tell me what happened in the last 3 hours. Tell me what happened between 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. So it's all inbuilt. You will literally just write some queries in Elasticsearch that will give you the results. Now, the beauty of this stack, again, if you use Kibana, that eliminates that too, meaning you don't have to construct the queries on your own. You would just go and use some of the dashboarding mechanisms that Kibana provides you. You would just end up creating filters, end up creating filter in the sense like you have tons of data, filter to a particular scope, and then you would write a query saying, okay, you have the data now, filtered data. You will write a query saying, okay, give me the logs of this particular product for this particular division for this particular application. Give me the logs only of a GUI test. And then still you can go and filter it down by, okay, give me, you know, you gave me a set of logs between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m., but give me what happened only on Chrome latest. I don't care about Internet Explorer and Firefox for now. I want to analyze only Chrome. So you can kind of, or I want to analyze only what happened in my production, not in perf or QA. So Kibana kind of gives us that kind of a capability. So when I saw that, maybe you might see that in Twitter, we're talking, one of the architects here, who's a much senior guy, a general technologist, very passionate about technology and all that. He was the one, Jeff Sokolov was the guy who introduced this stack to me. When I saw that, basically he introduced it to as a mechanism to store application logs for our logging framework. When I saw this whole thing, it kind of, you know, I kind of took that concept and applied it into our continuous delivery and quality. So now along the pipeline, you know, every say build will emit the logs, deployment will emit the logs, testing will emit the logs, and we'll be able to correlate all these things using something, maybe like a build number across the environments and what happened. And because of the rich filtering that it gives, be it the time filter and all other stuff, it becomes very useful, for example, to figure out what is the flakiness index of a particular application's test automation, which one was failing, constantly failing in the last 30 days. So it can give us some of those answers very easily, fairly easy.
Awesome. And I'll have a link to this in the show notes. People have to see these dashboards. You have a bunch of posts on your CD Insight blog where you actually show step-by-step how you set one of these up and what it looks like on the dashboard. And what's awesome is what I was trying to do is I was trying to write all these complex queries to get this information out of the database. And like you said, using this technology, it makes it so much easier. And I really love the concept that you brought up about the logs, how you can say, this test was failing at this time. What was happening in the logs at that time? And you can correlate that information in real time and see it fairly easily without much effort, which is awesome once it's set up. So I think it's really cool. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm glad it's useful.
Are there any resources or books that you would recommend to someone to help them learn more about continuous delivery?
So yeah, it's a very good, it's a kind of timely thing. So when it comes to continuous delivery, there is from one thing that all of us should start off with, you know, just go and follow Jez Humble and Martin Fowler and a bunch of those guys. Recently, I saw a book, published by Continuous Delivery Live Lessons. It's a training, downloadable training by Jez Humble. It's a Pearson Inform IT. So that's kind of, I would say, anybody wants to start off and kind of get a little more, deeper insight into continuous delivery, that's kind of the first one. And then there are a bunch of books. Basically, Jez Humble, go around Jez Humble and see the book that he wrote and the video training that he has done. That should get started big time. And I'll just go and follow some of the engineering blogs that Netflix and Etsy and all of the guys are blogging about. It's like they're all kind of passionately running behind continuous delivery and shipping like 32 times a day.
In your experience, is there just one thing you see over and over again that most people doing continuous delivery are doing wrong?
I mean, I would say continuous delivery has become a lot of a buzzword. And of course, I probably have joined the bandwagon maybe later. I'm not one of the early adopters of, when Jez talked about it and all those guys. And in my opinion, there's no right or wrong way of doing it. The whole idea is to improve our maturity, improve our ability to deliver product. If you're shipping the product in a poor quality, if you're shipping a product once in 6 months, there is definitely an opportunity to make it to like 5 months, 27 days. And if you can make it to like, from 6 months to 5 months, 27 days, that's an improvement. And, you will learn along the way how you approached it. Possibly somebody would have used the word continuous delivery. Still, we're shipping after 5 months, but it's not bad. It's better compared to how we were shipping 6 months before. But the important aspect is like establish what we do here. It's like we kind of establish something called continuous delivery maturity model that includes your practices all the way from your product owner. How do they write the story? How do you, how do you write acceptance criteria? How do you verify acceptance criteria at the end of the story before you close that? All the way from there, and some of your coding practices, some of your development practices, code quality, your quality practices that includes test automation, and we try to bring in. When I say quality, it's not only functional. It is functional. It is load and performance. It is security. It is operations and everything. So we kind of established a pretty broad maturity matrix, for lack of a better term. And we try to measure our teams on that and constantly keep pushing forward. Some teams you might say, after reading the whole matrix, you might say, I am in red in all the categories, which is perfectly okay, as long as you kind of take 2 yards every month forward, and one day you will become yellow.
Awesome. Yeah, great advice. It's not a big bang. It's evolution over time. You're continually trying to get better and better based on feedback and improving. So I think that's a good point, so people don't get discouraged. Like, this doesn't work. Well, it's a slow road, but as long as you start chunking it up and getting things done little by little over time, you'll have a huge improvement, I think.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You're right on spot. I think that's what I was trying to say, and that's how we approach it too. And perhaps I think if we, I don't know if anybody has any kind of contact back to some of those guys who did this well, maybe in places like Netflix. If you go back and ask them, they would say like, yeah, we've been doing it for the last 5 years.
Right.
Nobody did it overnight.
Yep.
Unless you're a startup, you have 1,000 lines of code, probably you're not going to do it overnight.
Right. Awesome. Okay, Tas, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their continuous integration, continuous delivery efforts, and let us know the best way to find or contact you?
It's not more of an advice. It's more of a suggestion. It's like one piece of suggestion what I would leave is like when it comes to quality, we've been in that space. We've been doing quality in a particular way for so long. Constantly wherever I go, I would hear like, yeah, we're automated. We're running it every night. What I would say is like, it's great, whatever we have been doing so far, but future is not going to encourage that way of doing it. We have to bring quality into the team. We have to take the team along with us. And there are some miscalculations, like when somebody talks about Agile, people start thinking about there are no more, there's no room for quality engineers anymore. There are no QAs, and everybody should do everything kind of, bandwagon, right? But what I mean is like, there's definitely a lot of room for quality experts, quality evangelists, and because somebody has to look at it from quality lens. And the catch here is like, how would you make it more appealing to the rest of the team? How would you engage the rest of the team? How would you enforce some of these standards through some sort of automation? like using something like Sonar to stop your build if something, if unit tests fail, and using some of these, elevating the awareness and visibility using some of the dashboards that we talked about. You know, those are all the aspects that I have been personally focusing on the quality side of things. So it's all interrelated. Quality is not going to stand on the sidelines while development is going really fast. We have to learn some techniques to jump on that, train and be with them, stay engaged, keep the developers along with us, and make them listen to your song and you listen to their song. It's all about that. The Agile quality is very interesting. I'm very passionate about, and for those, a lot of quality experts, I'm sure, there are plenty of other ways, but I would say, these are some of the areas that I'm really looking forward to see some change.
Cool. And the best way someone could find or contact you?
I am in LinkedIn. That's kind of the best profile. If you go to LinkedIn, you could find me, Sahasvaranamam Subramanian. And also, I am in Twitter, at Sahasvaranamam. It's my full first name. And those are the best ways.
Thank you, Sahas, for your continuous delivery automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/73. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And as you just heard in the interview, Sahas recommends Sauce Labs for your continuous delivery effort, so make sure to check them out. And if this episode helped you in any way, I would love it if you shared it with a friend or coworker to help spread automation awesomeness to the masses. And if you had an extra moment, why not go ahead and rate and review Test Talks in iTunes? It really helps in the rankings, and I appreciate all the feedback that I get. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.